Accordingly, Ambassador Hitch and Assistant Secretary Rutledge will be flying back to Washington for consultations, the spokesman told the audience. Does this signal a break in relations with China? A reporter asked. Not at all. Consultations means just that. He's good, Ryan said, watching the TV. Not good enough, Arnie Van Dam observed. You're gonna get hit with this too, the next time they catch you in front of a camera, Jack. Christ, Oleg, are you serious? So it would appear, Mishka. The Chinese wanted to kill Golovkov, Riley whispered. What's the profit in killing him? He is the chief advisor to President Grushevoy. So, get him and hurt your president and thereby hurt your country. Still, it's one hell of a dangerous play. Shit, Ryan observed quietly when Dan Murray handed him the fax from Moscow. Has Ed Foley seen this yet? I've sent the fax over. Pat? Ryan turned to the Attorney General, Pat Martin. Mr. President, it's tantamount to an act of war. I've told Riley to offer all the assistance he can and report back. They know he's doing that, of course. So your pal Golovko wants you to know. My God, Jack, Mary Pat said. Jack was in his private study off the Oval Office, sipping a glass of whiskey with the DCI and his wife, the DDO. Jack, asked Ed, you give this to the Secret Service? No. Oh, yeah. If you're willing to commit one act of war, why not another? And they don't have much reason to like you at the moment. Even with Sorgi, they're so different from us that reading their minds is a son of a bitch, and they've just taken one in the teeth. Though I don't think they really know that yet. They're going to find out in less than a week. Oh, how's that? George Winston tells me a bunch of their commercial contracts are coming due in less than 10 days. We'll see then what effect this has on their commercial accounts, and so will they. I see our engineers are as good as ever, Bondarenko observed to Aliyev. As he watched, earth-moving machines were carving a path through the primeval forests. This road would serve both the gold strike and the oil fields. And this wasn't the only one. Two additional routes were being worked. Over a third of the Russian army's available engineers were on these projects. The oil field was ultimately the economic salvation of his country. And it was Bondarenko's job to guard it. Meanwhile, most of Bondarenko's engineers had been stripped away. You know what worries me? We've built an invasion route. For the first time, the Chinese could jump across the border and make good time to the North Siberian coast. Before, the natural obstacles, mainly the wooded terrain, would have made that task difficult. But now there was both a way to get there and a reason to go there as well. Lord, the president was sitting in the Oval Office, smoking and watching TV. He had just invoked the Trade Recovery Act. This time it was C-SPAN. Members of the United States House of Representatives were speaking in the well about China. All were speaking in favor of a resolution to condemn the People's Republic of China. The other network showed demonstrations in the streets, and it appeared that Taiwan's We're the Good Guys campaign had taken hold. Protesters were also busy identifying American firms that did business on the Chinese mainland with the aim of boycotting them. Talk to me, Arnie. This looks serious, Van Dam said. Gee, Arnie, I can see that. How serious? Enough that I'd sell stock in those companies, and this movement may have legs. That's when the phone rang. It was Ryan's private line. Yeah? Jack, it's George. Got a minute? Sure, come on over. Few people could simply open the door to the Oval Office and walk in, but George Winston was one of them, mainly because the Secret Service belonged to him. Mark Gant was with him, looking as though he'd just run a marathon. Hey, Jack. George? Mark, you look like hell, Ryan said. Oh, you just flew in, didn't you? Check this out, Winston nodded to Gant. Mr. President, these are the PRC's current currency accounts. We keep tabs on currency trading worldwide to make sure we know where the dollar is, which means we pretty much know where all the hard currency is in the world. So? So the PRC's liquidity situation is in the shitter. Gant reported. Ryan looked down the columns of numbers. Damn, where have they been dumping all their money? Buying military hardware. And they've spent their entire trade surplus this way. They had to pay cash up front because the producers need the cash to run the production, and they don't want to get stuck holding the bag. Not too many people need 5,000 tank guns, Gant explained. So, So China is essentially out of cash. They have enough cash for 3 months' worth of oil, and then their country starts coming to a stop, including their military, which is their largest oil consumer. Go on. Sir, the PRC is just about bankrupt. They're going to find that out, and it's going to be a bit of a shock for them. Mark, what did you make of the negotiations? They're the most arrogant sons of bitches I've ever seen. By the way, I liked what you told that Chinese diplomat. What's that, sir? Their dicks aren't big enough to get in a pissing contest with us. Nice turn of phrase, if not exactly diplomatic. How did you know that? I never repeated that to anybody, not even to that jerk Rutledge. Oh, we have ways, Jack answered, suddenly realizing that he'd revealed something from a compartment named Sorgi. Oops. In China, the Ministry of Finance was a bastard orphan child peopled by bureaucrats who struggled to do impossible things. The first and easiest impossibility, because it had to be done, was for its senior members to cast aside everything they'd learned in their universities and Communist Party meetings. To operate in the world financial system, they had to understand and play by, and within, the world monetary rules, instead of the holy writ of Karl Marx. The Ministry of Finance, therefore, was placed in the unenviable position of having to explain to the communist clergy that their god was a false one, that their perfect theoretical model just didn't play in the real world, and that therefore they had to bend to a reality which they had rejected. The Minister of Finance was surnamed Tian, which appropriately meant coins or money, and he'd been in the job for 6 years. His background was in engineering. He'd built railroads in the northeastern part of his country for 20 years. He'd actually handled his ministerial job quite well, the international community judged, but Qian Kun was often the one who had to explain to the Politburo that the Politburo couldn't do everything it wanted to do, which meant he was about as welcome in the room as a plague rat. This would be one more such day, he feared, sitting in the back of his ministerial car on the way to the morning meeting.